Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 328. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and whitewater rafting and zip lines as we go to Costa Rica. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into the main segment of the show today, which will not be an interview, I do have some news stories for you. In the first one, if you are wondering how much the cost of fuel is affecting the airlines, Delta Airlines announced that they are buying a refinery for $180 million. Those of you who are not sure what they're doing should look up the term vertical monopoly and Andrew Carnegie. Usually people who are on parole are restricted from traveling, but recently a parolee in San Diego with a rap sheet 22 pages thick managed to get on board a plane even though he didn't have a ticket. He managed to get on board a United Airlines flight 6323 at San Diego International Airport. But fortunately, when people wander through fire doors, it does set off alarms, and the flight attendant quickly realized there were too many people on the plane, and they spotted the extra passenger, who was disheveled and suspicious. We stayed in a bad hotel room last night, but not nearly as bad as the idea of a Dutch entrepreneur who wants to extend a chain of divorce hotels around the globe. While you're getting divorced and handling all the paperwork, you can relax around the pool and have a fine meal together. Normally, you would stay in separate rooms. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'm actually going to be my own guest this week on the Amateur Traveler, talking about a trip that we just did to Costa Rica. We just got back about a week ago, and we were there for just a little over a week. These are actually not my favorite episodes, because I've obviously already heard these travel stories, but they are some of the favorite episodes for Mike, my son, who does the editing, because I'm not a bad edit. So we went down to Costa Rica, and we were only there for a little over a week, as I said, and you can't see the whole country in a little over a week. So this is not the show to tell you about all the possibilities of all the things you can do in Costa Rica. We'll talk at the end about some of the things that we didn't do and why we didn't do them. But if you want to get a little more overview, we did do an episode way back in episode 116 on travel to Costa Rica, and that was with guest Harry Pariser, who's written a guidebook on Costa Rica. One thing that I didn't like about that episode as much, though, is I had a harder time getting him to recommend a specific itinerary for, say, a week-long trip. And that's more of what this episode will do. First, we should say that the time that most people go down to Costa Rica, the time of year, is from November to April. That's the biggest tourist time in Costa Rica, because the rainy season can often start here in May, which is when we went down. And it actually worked out very well for us on this particular trip. We did run into a little rain, and one notable exception to the weather wasn't at all a problem that I'll talk about later. But it also meant that we had no tourists. Basically, so many places that we went, we really weren't running into crowds. We weren't having a difficult time making reservations. So it, for us, worked out to be a pretty good time to go. But again, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it because you might run into some weather issues. Now, it's not that the weather is that much different times of the year. You're not talking about hot versus cold. You're talking about wet versus dry because we are talking about a tropical country. The one thing you should know if you're thinking about going down to Costa Rica is Costa Rica is amazingly green. Costa Rica is very verdant. It gets a lot of moisture, especially in some parts. We went to Costa Rica once before, a quick stop on a cruise to the Panama Canal, which I've talked about on this show before. And we went to a rainforest in northeastern Costa Rica, north of the port of Limon. And I did mention that it was a bus tour where people were complaining that it was raining in a place that rains 350 inches of rain a year. So there are places that are very, very wet. And then there are places that are just wet, but pretty much all of Costa Rica is very green, but it gets more rain in the summertime. So we did three main things on this particular trip. We did a rafting trip to the Piquari River, we went to the cloud forests in Monteverde, and then we went out to the Nicoya Peninsula to get some beach time in. We skipped some other things, and we skipped things like going to see the tortoises and the national parks at the beaches, because there is a time of year where you can go and you can watch the tortoises hatch their eggs, but it wasn't that time of year, so it didn't make sense. And probably the area that's best known for that is the area around Tortuguera on the Caribbean coast, in the northern Caribbean coast. We also didn't go down to the Osa Peninsula, which is one of the things we thought about, but it's quite far away. It's supposed to be a beautiful beaches down there and also some great rainforest, some great preserves. Lots of different national parks and preserves all over Costa Rica. One of the things that they're very good about is preserving some of the rainforest things. They've deforested quite a lot and put in a lot of coffee, which is the number two product out of Costa Rica. Number one thing that they grow is tourists, but a lot of preserves. And the other place we didn't go that's very popular is the area around Manuel Antonio, also on the Pacific coast. And the reason for that is because it is so popular, we heard it was a little more built up. And so with a limited amount of time, we chose to go over to the Nicoya Peninsula, which I'll talk about more, rather than Manuel Antonio, which has, again, some rainforest, some zip lines, and then also some good beaches. So zip lines. One of the things I would say about Costa Rica is a great place to go if you want an active vacation. It is not a great place to go, for instance, to see the ruins. There really aren't that many pre-Columbian ruins. There's one that I know of in the whole country of Costa Rica. You want ruins, you go to Belize, you go to Honduras, you go to Mexico. But you don't go to Costa Rica for that. Costa Rica was named Rich Coast because the people who greeted the Spaniards as they came in were wearing a lot of gold, but there weren't a lot of fabulous cities of gold that later on the Spaniards discovered. And so the Costa Rican population doesn't tend to be quite as heavily influenced by pre-Columbian history or by pre-Columbian cultures as some of the other places, like, for instance, Mexico. So you don't go for that. And so if you're not interested in an active vacation, I would probably recommend going someplace else. I really think that Costa Rica, what they're very good at, what they're known for, what they pride themselves on is an active vacation. And so that was what we tried to do. And so the very first day we were planning, we flew into San Jose, Costa Rica, which is what most people will do. It's an easy airport to get in and out of. We did not stay in San Jose. In fact, we didn't spend much time in San Jose at all. We basically just drove through it because we didn't see a lot of recommendations for spending time in San Jose. Costa Rica is a safe country, but the guidebooks definitely warn against property crime. And as you drive through some of the big cities, you do see the concertina barbed wire and, you know, some people who are protecting their valuables in a way that says that there is property crime there. But I wouldn't discourage you about going there. Certainly a very safe country. But San Jose is not highly recommended by most guidebooks, so we didn't spend a lot of time there. We stayed out in Alajuela, which is out by the airport. The San Jose airport is not in San Jose. It's one of those things where it's out of town. And then what we had planned to do is we were going to do a package with the hotel that we stayed at. We stayed at the Hotel Rosa de Americana in Alajuela, and they had package tours available, so we could do 3 nights at the hotel, 2 when we first got there, 1 when we were leaving the country, and then go on a trip with them. When we were going to do a trip to a coffee plantation and then to one of the many volcanoes in Costa Rica, the Poás volcano, and actually the Poás volcano is active right now, active in the sense that it's steaming and it's normally a lake and things, so it might have been a very interesting trip. But we chose instead to do a whitewater rafting trip. Just at the very last minute in our planning, we said, hey, really we should try and see if we could do some of the whitewater rafting that we've heard about. And we went down to the Pequari River with a guided rafting tour. And it was spectacular. It was awesome. And I'm one who likes whitewater rafting. We talked about it on this show before. I've been rafting on the American River here in California, the Green River in Colorado, which I don't know if we did a show about, but that was recommended by Oars, the outfitting company who took me on that trip. And then I've also rafted on the Rogue River in Oregon. And the Pequari River is probably the best rafting that I have been on to date. We did a 20-mile stretch of the Pequari River, and there were 50 sets of rapids in that 20 miles, getting as serious as Class 3 and Class 4 rapids, which means we're wearing helmets, but we're not in danger of dying at any moment. They're not that level, but they're very interesting rapids. There's a lot going on. And that was a 3-hour rafting trip. So basically lots of rapid and then a little time off and then a rapid and a little time off, but not long stretches of flat or calm water. But when you were not in the rapids, you were in a rainforest. You were in this canyon with waterfalls on every sides and different camping opportunities there. If you had longer time, you could certainly pay to stay in one of those places, bring your insect repellent. Obviously, you're in a jungle. And there are both inexpensive and some really, really incredibly expensive. Probably the most expensive place that we saw was over $1,000 a night, and it was a camping area right by the Pequari River, but it was high-end camping for people that I don't know if they included a butler, but they really should have at that price. So the Pequari rafting, excellent, wonderful opportunity, although do bring your sunscreen because the water is warm, the day is beautiful, and you may not realize just how toasty you're getting, and I fried myself, and I'm still losing a layer of skin from that 2 weeks later. So that was definitely a highlight of the trip. I should mention that since we were staying in Alajuela, we were staying out of San Jose, and the rafting company came and picked us up in Alajuela and then picked up people along the way, including in San Jose. And so it probably took an hour to pick everybody up, and then it took another 2 hours to drive out to where you were going to get on the river. So you stopped for breakfast, and then you got on the river, and you rafted for 3 hours, and then you stopped for lunch, and then you drove back for 2 hours to San Jose and dropped people off, and then about an hour later dropped us off. So it was a long day. It was about a 13-hour day, basically the entire sunlit day, because we're talking about a tropical area, so basically we're more close to the equator, so the days are roughly 50-50 daylight and night, and so we're talking about daylight from 6 to 6, roughly. And we got dropped off at the pickup place at about 5:45, and we got dropped back there at, again, about 5:45 in the evening, so it's a long day, but it's a really fun outing. And I did find that in our experience, the guides and also the equipment, they had the big 6-person self-bailing rafts, was top-notch. It compared to anything that I've done in the U.S. And then our next stop was in Monteverde. And Monteverde is a cloud forest area to the north and west of San Jose. It is only probably about a 2.5-hour drive from San Jose, but it is not a place that you're going to take a big tour bus to get to, because the roads, once you get off the national highway, very quickly are unpaved roads. You rent a 4x4 when you go to Costa Rica. Most of the rental cars that we looked into there were 4x4s, because various areas, once you get off the national highway, are going to be a little more challenging. And the Monteverde area, what we read is that they probably didn't want to pave it because they didn't want to make it a quick stop for tourists who are coming off of the cruise ships. And so it takes a little more effort to get there. You've got to be willing to drive these mountain roads without guardrails quite high up, all the way up the mountain here to Monteverde. But it's definitely worth going. Once you get there, you do not feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. It's a rustic mountain town. Monteverde is, but there's all sorts of an incredible array of outfitters and activities and things to do up in Monteverde. Now, the stop that we skipped on the way up there because it would take a lot more time to get to, there is another volcano up there called Arenal that is quite popular to go to, especially if Arenal is erupting, which it has been the most active volcano, at least until recently, when we've got the Poás volcano that is just erupting in Costa Rica. And sometimes you get a light show. I mean, basically lava coming down the side of this very spectacular cone. But that wasn't going on right now, so we did skip Arenal because it's a lot of driving over mountain roads to get there over these dirt roads is what we understood. So we got to Monteverde, and we did three basic activities in Monteverde, and I would recommend all three. The first one was the easiest one, and that was the afternoon we got there. We went to a coffee and chocolate plantation tour, and this is not a big commercial coffee plantation because you'd find more of those closer to San Jose. But coffee is still a big part of the Costa Rican culture. Not just because they grow a lot of coffee, but because the way the coffee was grown in Costa Rica helped foster a middle class. Basically, they allowed everybody to grow a little coffee, and so many people get involved in the coffee harvesting. I think it's still a quarter of all the different residents of Costa Rica get involved at some time of the year in the coffee production. And so I would recommend if you're in Costa Rica, go do a tour of a coffee plantation, you know, taste some coffee, but also hear about how this has influenced Costa Rica. You'll see as you go along Costa Rica, and this is something that was a little odd, ox carts, brightly painted ox carts, and that's part of this coffee culture that when they were trying to get the coffee from the mountains where it's grown, because they grow a lot of mountain coffee and a lot of very fine coffee is how they're trying to differentiate, down to the ports, they were using these ox carts to do it, and so that became a prominent part of the culture, and now you can see we passed by three different brightly colored ox carts in some sort of local parade in a small town. So that's an interesting thing. And they also grow chocolate, and so we got a chance to do some chocolate tasting there as well and see the coffee that is being dried and all the different things going on there. So that was enjoyable. The next day, we got up early and went to the Monteverde Cloud Forest Reserve. And again, we were there in a time that was not very busy, so it was easy for us to get a guided tour out there. And I would highly recommend if you do that, do get a guided tour. And the reason for that is our guide had been doing tours of Monteverde for 9 years and still had an amazing sense of wonder about him. He would be in the midst of conversation with you, and then he would stop because he heard some particular bird. He would quickly be able to spot that bird. He was bringing a small telescope with him, and we'd be able to show you where that bird was. And because of that, we saw things like the quetzal bird. And the quetzal was a bird that's bright plumage was prized, for instance, with the Mayans and the Aztecs further north. It's a very rare bird now. It is endangered because its plumage is so brilliant. It was prized by people, unfortunately. But we did get a chance to see some quetzal, and you know, we tracked them for a while in the wilderness just from their call as our guide is calling back to the quetzal birds. You get this chance to see these bizarre trees because a lot of the trees that were in this cloud forest are things like wild avocado trees or the ficus tree. This may be something that you'd have in your living room, except it's much larger when it is being grown here in the rainforest, up here in the cloud forest. We happened to be there on a day with pretty good visibility. Our guide said quite often in the cloud forest, you might have 10 feet of visibility. So it's really going to depend a lot. You're talking about an area that's very, very wet, very, very humid. Even if it's not raining, it's so close to rain that it's basically 100% humidity. We got a chance to see things like tarantulas. That was probably not my daughter's highlight of the trip. We went on this trip with my daughter and her boyfriend. I should say this was a trip celebrating her graduation from college. And so our guide used a stick and teased a tarantula out of one of the holes that were along the side of the path. And really, I don't think that was one of the things we really wanted to know, was that there were tarantulas that were just that close to us. And this is something about the size of your palm, and orange and black, this very bright coloring. We had a chance to see howler monkeys way up in the trees. I have no good pictures of howler monkeys because they were constantly on the move and way up in the treetops. But that was interesting as they were calling out to us. Our guide got very excited because as he was walking on the path, he said, "Oh, there's howler monkey scat, and it's fresh. It's less than 5 minutes old." And so he started making monkey sounds. And it was just a very enjoyable visit, probably a couple-hour visit to the rainforest. Not a long walk, not a very strenuous thing. Of course, you are at altitude, so that's something to take in mind is you're up maybe 5,000 feet as you're doing this hike. And two more odd things. One is I would have better pictures, actually, of my trip to the park if I had brought a cheaper camera. This is a little odd. But if I'd brought a pocket camera, it would have been easier to hold my camera up to the small telescope that the guide had to take pictures of some of these things that he was spotting with this telescope. But I had to make do with my telephoto lens, which is a good telephoto lens. So, but that's something to keep in mind. And the second thing is, even if you don't have time to tour the park, just park in the parking lot and go to the hummingbird exhibit. They've got some feeders there and an amazing variety of hummingbirds, just beautiful, and amazing how combative they are towards each other. But you'll see I took more pictures probably of hummingbirds than anything else there. And while the park has a entrance fee and the guide has an additional entrance fee, because you don't have to do, you could do a self-guided tour, the hummingbird exhibit is free. And so that's something that I would recommend to everybody to see. But again, I would recommend the guided tours there. And then in the afternoon, we did something that you just can't go to Costa Rica without doing. I think it's nearly mandatory. It may be a law, and that is doing a zip line. Now, this is the one time we did run into weather problems because as we are getting up on the zip line, a storm front is rolling in. And so it is a thunder and lightning storm. And so they told us they were probably going to have to cut us short, and they did, in fact, cut the trip in half. The trip involved 15 different zip lines, one right after another. And so basically you're up in the canopy. They call it a canopy tour, but really don't think of it as an echo tour. Do the echo tour with your guide down in Monteverde, but do the canopy tour for adrenaline. You do that up there because it is fun. You go on, you know, things like swings. We went with the original canopy tour company, but there's a number of different companies up there that do canopy tours. Again, not an ecological tour, but still a great fun tour. We did 8 of 15 different zip lines before they decided that standing 100 feet in the air during a thunderstorm on a metal platform attached to a long metal cable might not, in fact, be the brightest thing to do. And so the guides started getting faster and faster as they're hurrying us through these different things until we basically took an exit at some point down to solid ground and then ran back out of the storm. They did offer that because it was weather that was a problem, we could come back the next day and finish our tour, but we chose not to do that. We felt that we had had the adrenaline that we were looking for, quite possibly not in the way that we were looking for it, but great experience. I would definitely do it again. Monteverde has a number of different restaurants. They're really set up to handle tourists up in Monteverde. I should mention at this point, Costa Rican food is not perhaps the most varied food. I'd say the Costa Rican breakfast or dinner isn't really all that different. Lunch is about the same. We're talking about rice and beans and plantains. You get eggs with breakfast. You get chicken with lunch. And that's kind of the basic meal. And you can find that meal pretty much any time of day, anywhere. Now, when you're in Monteverde or someplace like that, you're getting other meals as well. There are Mexican restaurants or there are meals with a little more variety. We stayed in the Monteverde Village Lodge, which was a very nice small hotel with very helpful owners. It's not fancy. It wasn't expensive, probably $50 a night with plenty of room. So I would definitely recommend that as well. And again, getting to and from Monteverde is really part of the experience. The National Highway is a fine highway. I'd read that the roads were not good in Costa Rica, but the main highway was, we're not talking about a four-lane highway in many places. It's a two-lane highway, but the road was good enough quality, and certainly you appreciated getting back to it after being driving up on these rutted dirt roads. And the dirt roads obviously change quite a lot in terms of how easy they are to drive. In some parts of the rainy season, some parts are just completely impassable. So keep that in mind. And then our third stop, as I mentioned, was the Nicoya Peninsula. Nicoya Peninsula we wanted to go to because it was a little more out of the way. This is an area where we talked to someone who was an expat living down there, and he said 8-9 years ago he went to the area where we went to Malpais, and Malpais is kind of the western tip of Costa Rica out there on this Nicoya Peninsula. It is really a long time to drive to if you drove down the peninsula, so we took a ferry across from the mainland. And I should say the ferry was one of those places where we didn't see the kind of crowds that we were reading about in our guidebooks, probably because we were there in May. And so they were saying, you know, make sure you get there at 9 o'clock. You can get there early for that ferry. We could have shown up probably for any of the ferries with a half hour warning ahead of time and gotten on. The ferries did not fill up this time of year. And it was a nice smooth crossing across this inlet to go out to the peninsula and certainly beat trying to do the drive down the long way. 8 or 9 years ago, there were just maybe one shack, he said, down there with a bunch of hippies and surfers, because this is a surfing region. But now it's an area where there are quite a few hotels down in Malpais, but it's still a very rustic area. So Malpais and the village just north of that, for instance, still unpaved streets, no real discernible downtown, just in the middle of the jungle. Here's a nice Argentinian barbecue restaurant, and here's a nice hotel. And so it's a little more expensive to stay in, or at least there are some options that are nicer and upscale. We stayed in a very lovely hotel for a little bit over $100 a night, so more of a splurge, called the Moana Lodge. That it was a beautiful, I would say, a luxury hotel or a boutique hotel that climbed the mountain. And Costa Rica is a very mountainous area, so a lot of different places other than the central area are mountainous, including the Nicoya Peninsula. And fortunately, they had somebody there who was helping you carry your luggage up the mountain, because just to get to breakfast in the morning, I would say, was probably roughly a 5-story climb from our room up to the breakfast room. But that does mean that the breakfast room or the restaurant up at the top of the mountain, which also served tapas in the evenings, Spanish-style tapas, had a beautiful view over the jungle canopy out of the coastline there in Malpais. There are, again, places to zip line. There are nature preserves. You go out there, though, for the beaches. And especially if you're a surfer, there are surfing schools there, although we did not take part in surfing. But we did take part in a snorkel cruise, and that is a very typical thing to do. We went down to Montezuma. Montezuma is a real hippie town, a little small town, probably mostly two streets, cross streets, with people making jewelry on the side of the road, and then a lot of different trip outfitters. And the most common trip is a trip out to the Isla Tortuga, or the Island of Tortoises, not that we saw any, where you do a snorkel trip, get in a small dive boat, cruise down the coast of the Nicoya Peninsula. It's going to be nicer on a calm day than I'm sure it would be on a day with a lot of chop, because you're not in a particularly big boat. Go down to the Isla Tortuga. The snorkeling there, I would say, is not the best snorkeling I've had. The water was warm. There were plenty of fish, not quite the variety of fish I've seen in some places, but the visibility wasn't terrific. I'd say the visibility in the water was maybe about 10 feet where we went off of that particular island. And then the island is really kind of a private island where a lot of groups go, and it's a beautiful white sand beach. You can rent a chaise lounge, an umbrella if you want to, or rent a kayak. So it's very much geared towards tourists, very much a tourist experience, but it was a fun experience, a beautiful beach. You'll see some pictures of that in the show, as well as some pictures have started to show up on the episode as well. So that's the Nicoya Peninsula. That was our third stop, and then basically made our way from there back to San Jose to fly out again. Questions that I haven't answered that I usually ask people: what surprised me? I'm not sure really what surprised me. We've done a lot of reading this time. You don't really need a lot of Spanish to get by in Costa Rica. They're very much geared for tourists, and so we got a chance to use our Spanish, but we could have almost always fallen back to English, I think. So that's something that you should be aware of. The driving was interesting because, for me, I think that made it part of the adventure. Driving down to the town of Malpais, for instance, where the last 10 20 miles, I'm not sure exactly how far, are all on dirt roads and switchbacks and things like that. For me, just made it part of the adventure. The fact that you could go down there, though, and then you could still find a nice restaurant to go out to dinner at, whether it be a pizza place or an Argentinian barbecue place, or there was a great Mexican cantina along the beach side. The place that we went to on the beach was you drive up to the Zen Hotel, take a left on a little dirt road, and found a white sand beach, almost a private beach, with a couple friendly dogs that wanted to play, and right next to that was a delicious Mexican beachside cafe. So the fact that you're in the middle of nowhere and yet not was kind of a nice combination. The most memorable day for me was probably the rafting of the Pecuari River, but Monte Verde was also, as people say, one of the highlights of Costa Rica, definitely a must-stop. I don't think you could go to Costa Rica without doing Monte Verde. If you're not interested in going up there, then really I'd say skip Costa Rica, because Costa Rica is just not the place for you. One surprise, it is an area where it's fairly easy to get money. You get the ATM machines, and even way out in Malpais, they now have one there, so you don't have to drive 30 miles to the nearest ATM machine. But there were places where, in some of the hotels, like the hotel we stayed in Alajuela, they wanted a cash payment. And they told us this up front before we went down, but we were doing, remember, a three-night stay. Plus, we bought this package of a rafting trip through them, and it was two different rooms. And so basically, we owed them $800 US, and we brought it in cash. And I don't like carrying cash with me, period. I don't like carrying cash with me traveling, even more so. And I don't like carrying cash with me traveling to some place that's known to have some problems with property crime, with pickpockets and things like that, even more so. So I was a little uncomfortable. I do have a review of some pickpocket pants I was wearing that helped me feel a little better about the large sum of cash that was in my pocket. So there are some times, and definitely look into that with the different places that you may stay if you book ahead of time, where they do prefer cash over credit, although a lot of places we were able to use credit. The other thing to be aware of is it's almost like Costa Rica's on two standards, because the dollar is very readily accepted. The one thing to be aware of is the exchange rate. You're dealing with a 500 Costa Rican colones to $1. And so as you're dealing with the Costa Rican money, it's one of those places where you're pulling 10,000 colones bills out of your wallet, which is about the equivalent of a 20. And that can always be a little odd when you're dealing with things with that many zeros. The recommendation I have, and this is a general recommendation for travel, is figure out which of the bills that they have is equivalent to the American $20 bill, and there's always one, and then just use that as your mental gauge of how much money you're spending. It's not a particularly cheap place. I would say dinners we were spending at night, not necessarily at very fancy places, you know, $10 to $15 probably for most of the dinners we had, a little more when we were eating tapas up in that restaurant with a beautiful view of the coast at Malpais, a little less maybe at some other places, but not particularly inexpensive. The hotels we were staying at were from rustic to boutique fancy, and they were probably $50 to maybe $120 a night, roughly. One of the reasons we did go to Costa Rica is the flights right now are very affordable, certainly much more affordable than Europe, so that's something to keep in mind. Now, if you're going to do a lot of activities and trips and zip lines and things like that, that's quickly going to add up too, so make sure you factor that into your budget, because that is something you're probably going to do if you go down to someplace like Costa Rica. One thing I should say and remind people is that Costa Rica is used to be all jungle. It's less than all jungle now because coffee plantations and such, but think of it as that before you go. And if that's going to be a problem, don't go. Because we ran into, for instance, one couple that are on their honeymoon. We're out in Malpais, and as I mentioned, this was a hotel and restaurant that we had splurged at. So it's a lovely hotel, really very nice. Now, clearly when you walk into the room and the air conditioning has been off, it's very hot, and they had some problems, this couple, with their air conditioning, so they weren't all that happy about that, but they fixed it very promptly. I don't think there was really that big a problem. But this is a place where my wife says she saw, you know, a tarantula walking across the path, although we discovered later on that what we originally thought were tarantulas in that area may not have been. And that's good, because as we were driving on the dirt road between the hotel and the larger area of town, we saw maybe 20 or 30 of these fist size, eight-legged, brightly colored black and orange arachnids, and we're really grossed out. And later on, we saw basically a crab that shape, and I think probably what we saw on the highway there were crabs and not tarantulas. And for us, that made a big difference, because the difference between a very large spider and a very small crab is strangely less gross, because, for instance, one you can eat and the other one is just this thing of nightmares. Even though they're both arachnids, they're both eight legs. But anyway, this couple that we're talking about, this lovely hotel, we overheard them saying something like, it's just like camping. Well, no, it's not just like camping. It's like staying in a luxury hotel in a jungle. There is wildlife. There are birds there around. There are spiders. There are probably big cockroaches and things like that. So it is a jungle area. Again, that was part of what we went down there to see, was the wildlife. Although we did enjoy it less when we were seeing that at dinner time, I would have to say. But keep in mind that as you go down and put yourself in that frame of reference, you will have more problems with mosquitoes. You have to watch sunburn. But wonderful, wonderful place to go. For single men, I should say that an expat down there claimed, and I don't know how much credence to put into it, that there are a lot more Costa Rican women than there are men, because it's a macho culture and they keep having children until they have a son. I don't know if that's true, but I would say the Costa Rican people are certainly an attractive people, and if you're single, that might be something you want to look into. As we go to wrap this up, the last two questions that I will ask myself. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Costa Rica when what? You really know you're in Costa Rica when you find yourself zipping through the jungle on a zip line past 100-foot tall avocado trees with overgrown house plants crawling 50 feet up them, and hear the sound in the distance of the howler monkeys. That's a Costa Rican experience. And if I had to summarize Costa Rica in three words, green would be one of them. In fact, I'm tempted to say all three words is green. It's just a beautiful, verdant country. So green, adventure, and beach. We saw a lot of pictures of beaches that were not the beautiful white sand beaches, but we did, by going down to Malpais and the Nicoya Peninsula, find just some beautiful beaches for just at least one day of doing absolutely nothing. I think I just got to the beach, I hadn't even brought a book, and I just slept. And so it was a wonderful experience, a lot of adventure, and some just relaxation. And that's our trip to Costa Rica. In news of the community, we heard from Amy, who wrote in response to the Travel to Belgium episode, recent episode, popular episode, I should say. I was in Belgium in 2008 and couldn't help chiming in with favorites from my trip that Sam didn't mention. In Brussels, we really enjoyed the Kudenburg Museum. This is not one of the larger museums, and the entrance is rather hard to find. You enter at or near the Bellevue Museum. The Kudenburg Museum is an archaeological site underneath the current city where you can see the remains of the former palace. There are also some great temporary exhibits at Royal Museum of Art and History when we were there. As for food, Sam mentioned waffles piled high with lots of toppings, but when we were there, the real treat was the piping hot waffles you could buy on the street and eat with your hands without toppings. I never even saw toppings offered with these. Always available in train platforms, spectacular. The locals were eating them all the time as well. I highly recommend a nice dinner at Viva Emboma, at Rue de Flandre 17 near St. Catherine's Church, but it's best to get a reservation, especially on the weekend. Less expensive and better food than most of the other sit-down places we tried. On the other end of the spectrum, we had a very inexpensive and really delicious lunch at a small place at Place de Jeux de Bar, and all of these are written, I should say, on the comment on the episode so you can see how they are spelled, where there was a great Saturday flea market. As for Ghent, Sam didn't mention what I considered the main attraction, the Adoration of the Lamb, a 15th century altarpiece by Van Eck that lives in St. Barrow's Cathedral in the center of town. They have it in a tiny room, so you have to wait your turn to get in, but the ticket comes with the audio tour that is top-notch. Everyone should see this, although I completely agree with Sam that Kassel Gravenstein is a must-see. The medieval torture display was especially horrific and fabulous at the same time. We went to Bruges as well and really enjoyed it, but a couple of things Sam didn't mention that were highlights for us were the Groningen Museum, which houses a lot of amazing Flemish primitives, and the Bezuinhof, which is a small collection of buildings around a courtyard where lay sisters of the Catholic Church lived. We arrived there just before sunset, and it was magical. A wonderful and quiet place to sit and reflect. We also did a trip to Luxembourg City from Belgium, and I have always described this as a little jewel of a city, so was pleased to hear Sam describe it in a similar way. I have written in my travel journal that I felt all day like I was in some period movie about Mozart. When you're there, you should really take the tour of the casements. Some great views from there, and they are really fun to walk around. However, I do not recommend the National Museum of Art and History. The audio tour was not very good, and the signage wasn't that great either. Thanks again for another great episode. And Amy, thank you for your in-depth review of the episode and all the things that people should also know. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, do what Amy did and leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X, or join us in the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And as always, thanks so much for listening.